Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome, everybody. Chuck Bonnerill, Julie Hayden. We're about to get dumped on by a major snowstorm. we'll see how that goes. This is a Chuck and Julie grassroots show. Truth straight up.
That's right. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Oh, Sandra's saying she really likes the new intro photos. Thank you, Sandra.
Good. Thank you, Sandra.
So much to talk about today. We're going to have, as soon as we get him
Let's talk about the intro photographs now.
Yeah, really. Lord Conrad Black, we had him on before. He's a biographer, historian, but obviously the great breaking news, right? Ken Buck suddenly announces not only is he going to quit, not run for re-election, but he's also quitting like next week. So immediately suspicious minds are like, wait, so we will reveal it is as suspected a uniparty rhino swamp dirty backroom deal. And we will expose the whole thing coming up later in the show. But first we have with us biographer, historian, Lord Conrad Black. He's got that great new book. We talked with him a month and a half or so ago, The Political and Strategic History of the World, Volume 1. Sir, welcome to the show again, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. By the way, I agree with what you said about that congressman. I think it's an outrage.
This is a tease. So Lauren Boebert, who is running in, will be running in the general primary, is, you know, Trump endorsed. And this is, from what we can tell from political insiders, the whole thing is an attempt to sabotage her. So we'll be explaining that too. Right. Yeah. It's like wacky Colorado politics. You don't even want to know. You'd have to write volume one of that too. So
I was wondering, I saw you on TV a little while back, and you had a dinner with Jordan Peterson and Tucker Carlson and yourself. What happened to my invitation to that? I don't see it here.
You would have been welcome. The hostess was the Premier of Alberta,
Danielle Smith.
She handed out the invitations. We had a lot of fun with that. I hope you enjoyed watching it.
I did. It was great. It was just great. Well, let me ask you, you've written the history of the world, and just going out, you know, last time we got right into very specific ones, but just wondering, you know, what your conclusion is after kind of writing the history of the world. And I've studied history my whole life, and about to go see Dune 2, which has its own view on mankind and men and our nature, but do you think there's any chance for human beings?
I'm sorry, do I think there's any chance what?
Human beings.
You kind of talked about this before, too. Chuck has a pessimistic view of human beings, and he's asking, after reading the history of the world, is there reason to be hopeful?
Well, I think so.
I'll tell you why.
Okay, great.
This volume one, it takes us as far back as we can authenticate history. I don't get too much into folklore, but as far back as we can go in China, India, and the Middle East and get authentic history. And it brings us up to the start of the Roman Empire and the death of the first emperor, Augustus, Julius Caesar's great nephew. And in that time, you go from primitive clans and tribes with the high priest fighting with the chief or the king, and all of them fighting with each other, essentially similar in China, India, and Mesopotamia, the Middle East. And we get up to the time of Augustus, just 14 AD, the birth of Christ, and you can go from what is now Lisbon, Portugal, to what is now Baghdad on good, straight Roman roads. No robbers or brigands, hostels all along the way, so you can spend the night and have a hot dinner. And there was a economic free trade area across from Scotland to Ethiopia and from Portugal to Iraq, and it all functioned well. And that is progress, and the progress has continued. It didn't continue. It didn't. It through that first volume that you kindly referred to, the progress wasn't unbroken. There were terrible problems, and the progress since then, certainly as we all know, has not been unbroken. But it's there, and we mustn't lose faith in it. It is there. People get the human nature doesn't change, but people become wiser.
The wiser part. I mean, is it wise that we've got a war in Ukraine where we're just butchering away to the last Ukrainian, basically over nothing that makes any sense? We're in Gaza, butchering away there, and the Middle East, that's blowing up, and Africa is not much better. It's maybe it's just me, but I look all over the world and I go, it was probably better when Caesar Augustus was around.
It was good when he was there. I agree with that. But and look, there is this theory that the best period in all of human history was the second century, when you had a series of outstanding emperors. And minimal violence, and it worked perfectly. That was Trajan, Hadrian, Antoninus, Pius, and Marcus Aurelius. But on the points you just made, let me put a counter case to you.
Okay.
Israel is going to eliminate the terrorist apparatus of Hamas. That is progress. Once you get rid of those people, and once the so-called Palestinians are not led by people who will absolutely never accept the right of Israel to exist as a Jewish state, you can have peace. And in Ukraine, we could not tolerate the Russians taking Ukraine back. It would have reversed our victory in the Cold War, and it would have made the Western alliance look like a paper tiger. A general, as he then was, Eisenhower, said at the outbreak of the Korean War, we'll have 10 Koreas if we don't take a strong stand. Well, if Putin had just taken Ukraine without anything happening, which incidentally was what the then chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Milley, predicted, great triumph of military intelligence that was. If he had done that, it would have been bad for the world. It would have been a green light to all the aggressive states to ignore the West. Here, we, at a cost of only 6% of the annual defense budget of the United States, we're paying, we the West, NATO, Canada, we're all paying for it, but we're paying the military bills for the Ukrainians, but they're taking the casualties, and they've given Russia a bloody nose. And as long as we can end the war satisfactorily, more or less where it is, it's a victory for us. And we can then set about disentangling the Russians from the Chinese. We don't want Russia permanently in the arms of China. So these things, I frankly don't think that your president has managed them that well, but that's not the point. They can still come right.
I've come to the other conclusion that, after the fall of the Soviet Union in 92, and the agreement that they wouldn't rush, they could have the EU everywhere, but they wouldn't take NATO and run it up to the border. George Bush, the Bushies and other ones decided, no, we'll keep on pushing.
They were unwise. I said it at the time. We had to take Poland in. Britain and Canada and France went to war for Poland in 39. There's a Kosciuszko and Pulaski Boulevard in every city in America. And we didn't want we didn't want Germany to be the eastern border of the Western world. We had to bring Poland in. I wouldn't have gone further. I mean, good luck to the Latvians and Lithuanians and Estonians, but claiming that, under Clause 5 of NATO, an attack on Riga is the same as an attack on New York or Chicago or Montreal or something. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me, but we are where we are.
It doesn't look like it's going very well. There was a report, I think in the New York Times, shockingly, that indicated of the equipment we send over, about 30% actually gets to the front lines and the Ukrainians. The other 70% is siphoned off and sold all around the world
Well, if
to.
that's what's happening, that's just slap the administration and the Pentagon. Though that can be policed easily.
What
Yeah,
about
well,
the when you
you
can
can tell the
you
Ukrainian government that they use what's given to them for the purposes that it is given to them, or they don't get any more.
Yeah.
Then you'll stop that.
What about when you look at strategically and politically where we are now? There's a website that I like, the Conservative Treehouse, and he talks a lot there, the guy, about there's sort of two, so you've got the United States and Europe, Canada, and then you have sort of this evolving or developing BRICS, I guess, you know what I mean? China,
Yeah.
Russia, India. Do you see that continuing? Is that just sort of
No, I
a
think BRICS is a fraud. The Indians and the Chinese are practically at war with each other. The idea that they're, they skirmish all the time, and they're natural rivals and have been for millennia. And the idea that you can make something out of, Brazil, Russia, and India and China is nonsense. What we should do is bring India and Brazil into the G7. Just build up the G7 a bit, and bring in a few. Bring in a few others too. But they have to be serious countries.
Right. What about
Well, but they
strategically
don't want
then?
to be brought in. I mean, watch what the United States did to Russia and used its dollar aggressively and its SWIFT system and said, "Wait a minute." If they can do it against them, they can do it against us. Let's have something else that we can be independent of and not dependent upon the United States. And at least to
No,
date.
I don't mean I'm not. G7 isn't dependency on the U.S. It's an economic and a democratic a league of the economically leading democracies, and Israel and Brazil can come into that. I think in Brazil you might want to change your government, so you got
Yeah.
but they're
A
having elections.
non-democratic government of Brazil.
No, it's democratic, to be fair. They had an election. Pardon me, it was quite hotly contested, but that they haven't had a military government there for, gee, I think 35 or 40 years. I think Brazil will pass as a democracy.
What would you
The
looking
opposition party doesn't think so.
Well, but
Bolsonaro
I think
doesn't
they're
think
going to win
so
the next
anymore.
election. Then, if they win the election, I think they'll accept it's a democracy.
If you were sort of like, could go into the future and then write like you did, with volume one about now, how would you sort of describe some of the key political and strategic things? And I guess, and is there anything you think that people, just like when you look back at history, maybe at the time they didn't even realize it was as big a factor as it was, do you see anything like that happening now?
Yeah, well, look, I think start with Ukraine. We got two goals there. One is, the Russians have some rights. I mean, Ukraine never existed as a country, as a jurisdiction even, until the communists set it up as a province, of a so-called Republic of the USSR. And there are, about a sixth of the people are Russian speaking. So I have no problem with Russia taking back a bit of it, as long as they then accept that the new Ukraine and its revised borders is a legitimate country, and NATO and Russia guarantee that country, and they have to be real guarantees and not phony guarantees that, as you quite rightly mentioned that era, that we gave them when Ukraine, Kazakhstan, and Belarus voluntarily gave up the nuclear weapons that they inherited from the Soviet Union. We all guaranteed Ukraine then, and we ignored that guarantee. We've got to resurrect that and make sure that it stands. But after that, we have to outbid the Chinese for the affections of Russia. And I agree with what you said. We shouldn't have provoked the Russians as far as we did, trying to bring in former states of the Soviet
Right.
Union into NATO. We shouldn't have done that. The fact is, the West has a great deal more to offer to Russia, which is basically a Western country, than China does. And we want, Russia, it's never worked well politically, but it's a great civilization. It's the civilization of Tchaikovsky and Tolstoy and so forth. We want them. And we want them to feel that we want them in a positive way. And the the realignment that I think, obviously, NATO is obsolete the way it is. I mean, Turkey isn't a North Atlantic country, and what is it doing in NATO anyway? It's not really an ally right now. We want, I think, an alliance of democracies guaranteeing the borders of the democratic countries and make it a bigger and bigger alliance. And so it's not just dependent on the U.S. And we've got to stop the freeloading. And my country, I'm a dual citizen, Britain and Canada, and I'm in the British Parliament, as you mentioned, but Canada is the freeloader. Now, Britain isn't. Britain pays its way. It's always met its pledged share. It's just launched a huge aircraft carrier the size of the Nimitz-class carriers, and it's pulling its weight. But Canada is slacking, and it's a political issue in Canada. And I don't want to be the pub bore and write about it every week, but I hammer it as much as I can. But I think we want an evolving alliance that is always one that people, countries aspire to get into. So when you mentioned BRICS, I mean, obviously, at China's arrival, and Russia, for its own reasons, is attaching itself to China. But India and Brazil, I mean, India is an English-speaking democracy and a member of the Commonwealth. They would take an invitation to the G7 by flapping their arms. They'd come and get it if we gave them one. And so would Brazil. And so we always want to make sure that we're the biggest game in town. We're the big brand. We Western civilization, and that requires responsible economic management, a high military capability, a full deterrence, and sensible policy. And we haven't always had sensible policy. I mean, we plunged into Afghanistan. We didn't really achieve anything. We plunged into Iraq and tore that country to pieces. And now Iran runs most of it. Your President Carter basically threw out the Shah, who was the best ally we ever had in the Middle East. We all make mistakes, and we just got to be more careful.
Let me ask you this.
Why is it that some of the most, I'm not sure if feminine is the right word, but soft-looking leaders, whether it's Justin Trudeau or Macron, you scratch their surface and they're authoritarian thugs. I mean, it's just amazing. They look so...
I would distinguish Macron and Justin. Macron is a serious intellectual. I've known Justin since he was very young because I knew his father quite well. Pardon me. I think Justin is kind of a Peter Pan. You know, he's a sort of a flower child, frankly, a little like his mother was. And he's a good person and he means well, but he doesn't understand that authoritarianism on behalf of good intentions is still authoritarianism, and it's not acceptable. But he's reversed by the courts. I mean, when he does, I mean, we got it to the Supreme Court, and that controversy we had with the truckers. The Supreme Court upheld the truckers. So then they're going to sue the pants off the government, and they're going to get well paid for it. So justice prevails. Macron is different. He is a genuine intellectual, but he founded a new party, and he embraced every fad at the same time. He became very green, very Euro-integrationist. Well, beyond a certain point, green is nonsense. We're not incinerating ourselves. We don't know anything about global warming, and it so far consists of one Celsius degree in the last 80 years. So it's nothing to get that worried about. And Euro integration is rubbish. The British left, not because they don't like the Europeans, but because it isn't democratic. These EU commissioners aren't answerable to the European Parliament. They're appointed, not elected. They're self-sustaining, and they do whatever the hell they want. And in our business in England, they were sending us directives every week telling us what to do. And I told our people to ignore them because I knew the British government wouldn't prosecute us for ignoring stupid rules from Brussels. But that's the problem. They've got to recalibrate it. Everyone wants Europe to be states that aren't fighting with each other anymore, or cooperating and have an economic, an easy movement of goods and people. But the idea of one government for Europe is rubbish.
Well, why did Macron decide that it'd be a good idea to float the idea of bringing NATO troops into Ukraine. And even Schultz and all the other countries went, nah, that's not a great idea. We really don't need World War III right away. But he
Well,
was.
look, I think he's one of these people. You must have encountered these people. There's some types of Europeans who never stop fretting and fussing and wringing their hands and mopping their foreheads about whether the United States is a reliable ally. And periodically the French get the brilliant idea that it's really their vocation historically to lead Europe. And so I crack that up to the Gaullist, the Charles de Gaulle element in the mind of Macron, thinking, right, here's France's chance. We'll say we're ready to put troops into Ukraine if necessary. I mean, look, if the French put their army in Ukraine, it would really change the balance of power in Ukraine. I mean, the French army is probably at least as strong as the Russian army, but he's not serious. They're not going to do it. If he said, right, France, my dear fellow citizens, we are going into combat in Ukraine, they'd throw him out, they'd throw him out of the windows, not the door.
Defenestration.
Let me ask you on a lighter topic, but one that I find enormously curious. The royal family. I mean, you have obviously insight there, and I read fascinating. So Kate Middleton photoshopped a picture, and there are these conspiracy theories there. The king was sick, she was sick, they're not answering. And on one hand, to me, it's all fascinating, but I get the impression, and tell me if I'm wrong, that it is actually serious news, so to speak. It's serious. People in over there take it very seriously. And the royal family, I mean, we look at them as kind of celebrities, but they have a much bigger role, I get the impression there. And is there as much of a kerfuffle as it seems to be, like in the Daily Mail or something? Or
No,
I'm just
the
curious.
Daily Mail exaggerates. And as you know, the monarch in England, the late Queen and the present King, they're ceremonious figures and they live in palaces, but they don't run the country, and you know that. But they because they are impartial and because they only speak discreetly to the political leaders, they don't make public comments on political issues ever. There's a lot of guesswork about what they think and what they say. The prime minister of the country calls on the monarch every week, unless one or other of them is traveling outside the country. And so, the monarch is very well informed, and certainly the late queen, it must be said, in 70 years, she never once embarrassed the country. Never once. I mean, she wasn't tremendously flamboyant or imaginative, but very diligent and very admirable and very intelligent. And so far, the new king is off to a good start. As long as he doesn't go public with his nonsensical environmental views, he'll be fine. But the royals, apart from the monarch, are I mean, they're really treated in Britain much as you just said, like Hollywood characters. They're just sort of celebrities, and it's interesting to see what kind, if the princess is wearing a short dress or a long dress or this sort of thing. But it's kind of frivolous, but it's fun. And unless they do stupid things, which unfortunately has happened not recently, but well, I don't know. I mean, Harry and Meghan, I think it probably violated that. So if they do stupid things, the press got in their back. But if they don't, they're just there and you notice them. And, Princess, whatever it is, went to the opera last night and this kind of stuff. And it's just, it's light, But the monarch it's a serious position, but its power is very, very subtle. Now, there were times in her long reign when the Queen did influence government, but she did it absolutely discreetly, and her judgment was correct.
All right. Okay, that's
Well,
good. That answers.
what do you think is going to happen in our election here in the United States in November?
I hope you don't mind as a non-American being somewhat partisan here.
No, go ahead.
I fervently hope And I honestly believe that my friend of 25 years, Donald Trump, will be reelected. The world needs him.
And on that, that's a perfect way to end because we have to wrap it up. We heartily agree with you. Thank you.
Brad, thank
real
you
quick,
so much.
Your book is all over the place, right?
I love talking to you. I'd be happy to come back any day. I'll be in better voice. I'm just getting over a cold, which I got in Florida, by the way. But I'm getting over it.
All right, good. We'll feel better
great
soon.
Great to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Bye.
Lord Conrad Black there. And check out, we bought it, The Political and Strategic History of the World, Volume 1. It is really a fascinating, very good read.
Yes.
And then we had a ton of questions there, but let me go, because I want to go into, guys, we wanted to talk about the Ken Buck thing, because I think there's a lot to unpack here. And there is indeed a swamp, uniparty, rhino plot afoot. And, you know, just when you think, Chuck, that Ken Buck could not get any more dastardly, he does, right?
Yes.
So, and it's confusing and people are sorting out, but so here is what will happen. Ken Buck announced that he's quitting like next week, right? He's leaving next week. The timing and everything is interesting because what has to happen then in CD4, so the seat will be vacant. So they have to have a special election to fill that seat. Now, at the same time, you have 10 people running for the Republican nomination for the general election, right? So what is going to happen is Polis has announced, because Polis had a very narrow window. Buck, I think, timed this perfectly, forcing Polis to kind of handle it this way. And it's all designed to screw Lauren Boebert and help Jerry Sonnenberg, by the way. But so what will happen is a vacancy committee, so to speak, of a basically state legislators, elected officials, county officials, bonus members in CD4 will basically appoint a Republican, and on the Democrat side, somebody there will appoint the Democrat, and the Democrat and the Republican will run against each other on June 25th in the special election. Right, Chuck? I think I'm getting
That's
this
correct.
Right.
And they'll fill the unexpired term of...
Yes, and they will then go from June 25th till January, right?
Yes.
Simultaneously, voters in CD4 will get a second ballot where they will then vote for Democrats on their side, but the Republicans, out of the 10 or so candidates running, they will vote to select who will be the Republican candidate to run against a Democrat in the general election, right?
Yeah,
I mean, and so if you're a voter, it's going to be, I think, very confusing. What has been explained to us from political insiders is that all of this is a Ken Buck rhino uniparty plot
special
to boost Jerry Sonnenberg, who is one of the candidates running for CD4 in the broader primary, right? And to screw Lauren Boebert, because it put Lauren Boebert, and indeed Lauren Boebert announced today, she will not participate as a potential candidate in the special election, because to do so, she would have to quit in CD3. I mean, it would just be this god-awful mess, right? And in the meantime, the party insiders, I don't know, Chuck, the odds are that Sonnenberg will maybe get the appointment to run against the Democrat for the special election, right?
Yeah, maybe Ted Harvey, because Douglas County, maybe. I don't think anybody else, but you go, Ken, really? I mean, you really had to do this.
Right. It's from Jacob. Ken Buck is compromised. Absolutely. From Charlene, Ken Buck with his poison pill. Somebody owns him. Vote in the Democrat first ballot, then vote Boebert in the second ballot. Well, I guess it depends on who it is. And then Dave from Jacob, does Dave Williams have anything to say? I'll take the last one first, because we talked to Dave and Dave does not have anything to say. This is all in the hands of the CD4 people. I think Tom Weens is a chairperson there in the Republican Party. So this is the congressional district. Dave doesn't have anything to do with it. But Charlene, the problem with voting, you're going to have to vote. I mean, you don't want a Democrat to be sent to Congress, right? I mean, from June till January, right? A lot of damage could be done in that 6 months. And I think the thinking is that if you're, and I was reading this from a political consultant, it cracks me up, Chuck, when the establishment media talk about some political consultant that we never heard of. I'm like, really? I've never heard of that guy. But at any rate, I think he's accurate in that. So let's say you know, if your only choice in the special election district could be Jerry Sonnenberg versus the Democrats, of course, you're going to vote for Jerry Sonnenberg. But now, are you going to turn around if you're just a regular, not particularly well-informed voter? And now you have to select out of the 10 candidates, which one do you want to run in the primary?
Well, it won't be 10 because not all of them will get through the assembly.
Right. But still, there'll be several, right?
There'll be several, yes.
There'll be several. And I think there's an assumption that people will go, well, I just voted for, you know, Sonnenberg, so I'm going to go ahead and vote for Sonnenberg now.
Well, you know, if you're going to vote in these June elections, you probably pretty much know what you're doing.
Looks like an issue.
Okay, and this from Charlene: for 3 months, then summer recess, Democrat couldn't do any more harm than Buck did. That's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. But I still think, though, it is, again, it just needs to be exposed that Ken Buck, and I don't know what kind of backroom deal was made, but that is at least the general thinking. Now, what's interesting, though, is the makeup of CD4. I mean, it goes into Boulder County even, but it goes from essentially, you know, Wyoming down to the southern border and then all the way to the eastern plains. But it encompasses, so Sonnenberg's territory, he's from Sterling, right? He's got a lot of people and colleagues and things like that, probably supporters out there. In Douglas County, which is Ted Harvey land, right? Yeah. He's got a ton.
And Ted Harvey's a very good candidate.
Yeah, we like him. He's the grassroots guy, right? I mean, I would like to see Lauren Boebert get it and win. But like I said, Deborah Flora just announced that she will be entering the race to be considered as for the special election. But that's going to be decided by essentially a backroom group of...
Well, it's not bad. It's going to be a pretty big group, 40, 50 people. They'll make presentations to them and
right.
You know, I don't know if it's already going to be, you know, fixed in stone before they hear the presentations. I don't know, is Ken Buck going to give his recommendation, or is that, you know...
He gets to vote. He's a voting member of the Central
Committee.
He's a voting member of the Central Committee.
Why is that?
Because he's an elected official in CD4.
He's not an elected official.
He was elected in CD4. He's a congressman.
He resigned. He'll resign as of Monday.
Oh, that'll be interesting. I'm not sure. I don't know is he a bonus?
I don't think
member?
You get to be a former elector.
All I know is I read and who knows, Colorado Public Radio, maybe that's a good point. They just said that he would be able to vote. So maybe you're right. So this is going to be happening fast. The Democrats have already said, and they have some candidates too. And the reason we're not talking much about them is CD4 is very reliably Republican. So, but the Democrats say, well, they're going to start sort of their selection process April 1st because there has to be campaigning, right? I mean, between now and June 25th, right? Theoretically, and I think if, you know, we'll see who they nominate and we'll be doing our best to expose who votes for who and how the votes come down. But yeah, the thought being, from what I understand, is that they will be able to make presentations and give speeches. You know, I don't know. I mean, you're kind of more involved with some of that Central Committee and the Republican Party as a whole side, but how does that kind of stuff tend to work?
Well, no one knows because this is so rare that you have, normally you just have an election. You don't have two elections. I mean, this is weird. so no one knows. And you know, thank you, Ken, for educating us all on the weirdness of it. I just hope, you know, the hope is whatever Buck is doing, and assuming it's for Sonnenberg, everybody's going to go, I don't want somebody that Ken Buck wants. If Ken Buck wants A, I don't want A.
Right.
I'll take
right.
anybody but A.
Right.
So hopefully all these machinations, if it ends up Jerry Sonnenberg, they'll go, yeah, no.
So this is from Charlene. They're pushing Deborah Flora, in her opinion. Some people are pushing Deborah Flora, Charlene, but Ken Buck is not. Ken Buck did not do this to benefit Deborah Flora, right? Ken Buck, I think, did this his, and the people who would be pushing. I mean, Jerry Sonnenberg, remember, he was a state legislator, a senator,
he's
a representative.
The president, and he and Buck would have known each other because Buck was the Weld County
District attorney. He's thank you for the hospital provider fee. He was the one who engineered the end run around Tabor.
Right.
So I don't think, I know there are some people pushing Deborah Flora, and it'll just be, I mean, and they could have gambled wrong. But I think one of the things they had, and Lauren Boebert pointed this out when she accused, she said, this is just a dirty swamp trick by Ken Buck. And she's absolutely right, is a recent poll showed her having 32% of the vote. Surveyed like almost 1,000 people, and she had 32% of the vote, and all the other candidates split it up. But I mean, she was ahead. She was beating everybody by about 25 points. Wow. So it seems to me that that might have been a factor, that somebody somewhere said, hey, if I'm saying the Uniparty, the establishment, the donor class in Colorado, I'm suspecting, you know, was saying, hey, look, if we're not careful here, Lauren Boebert is going to win CD4. So we need to do something. So Buck is like, you know, I mean, he said he wants to step down and he's going to be working to make sure the right people win elections.
The right people, well, this is
sort of like Heidi Genau telling us that grassroots have to go in the right direction. Well, this is Ken, but I mean, this is election interference, really, or election rigging when you get right down to it. Because I don't know. I mean, what's your sense of it? Do you think I could just easily see how, if you're going to vote, and if you're going to vote for Jerry Sonnenberg, that's to say that he is the one that the central committee appoints to run in the special election. I think that your average person, if you're going to vote for him, you're probably just going to flip over the ballot and sign for the primary.
I don't think so, because the number of people going to be voting in this one, I mean, pretty limited. Not that too many people will care. And so I think they'll be pretty attuned. And I hope that it's just, you know, okay, let me know who Ken Buck wants. And then I can, you know, not do that person and choose among the rest of them, because, you know, I mean, it's too tricky by half by Ken, and that's typical of him.
Well, you know, yeah, and I got to wonder, I mean, what do you think? Because I think there is potentially sort of a split, and I don't know the numbers well enough. And I know there are people trying to figure this out as we speak to see. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that Sonnenberg is going to have a ton of support from the Weld County area, from the Eastern Plains area. I mean, he lives out there, well known out there. I think people like him out there. And Douglas County, I think, is typically more a little bit grassroots, hence, you know, Ted Harvey, who has equal support. Maybe not equal, but who has a lot of support there too, right? But I think it's screwy because
at least Ted Harvey is a good guy and a Trump supporter and lots of good stuff. And Jerry Sonnenberg is, who knows what he is.
Well, and maybe if you're, like I said, the donor class, you could be saying, and I don't think Ted Harvey is privy to this at all. I think Ted Harvey has, you know, he's nothing to do with this. But I think maybe they're like, they don't care. It's sort of like anybody but Boebert. And it, since they know that this, because of the logistics, that you'd have to quit in CD3 and then they'd have to go through all this in CD3, right? And people would hate her for that. So she knows, they knew that she probably would not be able to run for the special election, not that anyone would appoint her anyway. And right. So maybe there's a thought, hey, look, we can live with anybody but Lauren. I mean, do you think it's a little bit of that?
That's
too?
That's not how people think. They
okay.
Think we hate her, but we got to have somebody who we can call up and say, hey, put this in the bill and stuff. I mean, you know, it isn't anybody but, I mean, that's Deborah Flores' problem. You know, she's not anybody's big buddy. You know, she's a glam girl, you know.
Right, right.
Third and in line to Miss America one year. And so she's not going to be all, you know, but Jerry would be, and Holtorf maybe would be, and oh my
Holtorf,
God.
I'll give Holtorf this. I don't agree with them, but he was like, this is nothing but a slimy act by Ken Buck. I mean, that wasn't the word he used, but I'm like, I agree with Ken. So here from Charlene, of course, Ken wouldn't endorse Deborah. That would be the kiss of death. Koch's plan to stack the house with globalist rhinos. That's true, Charlene. This could be the Koch brothers involved in this too. From Kieran Candley. The person who betrayed his constituents will now dictate to them who the right predecessor is. Sounds
yeah,
about
exactly.
Right. And Karen says they will never support Ted Harvey. They want a never Trumper.
Yep.
The word I heard is they're going to prop up Flora. That would mean that she's not grassroots.
She's
well,
not
again,
grassroots.
Keep in mind, we're talking two different elections here, right? They're going to be two elections now. So there's going to be the special election between a Republican who will be nominated, no, who will be appointed by about 40, essentially CD4 insiders. I don't think Deborah Flora has the support of CD4 insiders, right? I mean, Jerry Sonnenberg would be screaming if she did. And so then Jacob, who won the primary, well, the primary, Jacob, is on June 25th. Okay, you've got your hand raised. Jacob, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, so you answered my question. So June 25th, well, if they're appointing somebody, why have a primary?
Because because they have to have an election to elect a new CD4 representative.
Candidate.
So there will be a Republican, got it, and a Democrat. But the Weld County or the CD4 insiders essentially will appoint the candidate for the Republican Party. See what I'm saying?
Or
there won't be
for the general or for the
special.
For this, so what's Boebert worried about? So when it comes to the primary, she'll get primaried in, and that's it.
Well, hopefully, I think there is some thinking that if you're an average voter, are you going to vote for, say, Jerry Sonnenberg in the special, and then turn around and vote against him in the primary? See the thinking there?
It could happen.
It could happen. I think Lauren Boebert is going to count on it happening. And Chuck, to your point, this is, and this kind of election, you probably will have your more educated voters in something like this. So,
I just wanted to say one thing. I was listening to Bill O'Reilly last night. He had this guy, Jack Blackman from New Jersey. He's one of the top attorneys, you know, like Turley. And he said something very disturbing. He goes, in New York, Trump is going to appeal that $400-something billion deal with Letitia James. If he loses the appeal, he cannot go to the Supreme Court.
Oh.
The ceiling is the state Supreme Court, and that's it.
Huh.
Well, he'll probably declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, I was going to say he screwed that.
But then again, the Constitution says, you know, you can't overprice somebody's punishment, you know, the judgment. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That was very disturbing last night.
Yeah, that is. That's kind of screwed. Okay. So, okay, thank you.
Bye.
All right. Okay, so back to Charlene and Kieran are suspecting Deborah Flora. Charlene says they're so scared of Boebert, like the Dem rats always scheming. And then Kieran, isn't Douglas County much bigger in population than Eastern Weld? Seems to me that they will prop up whoever they appoint to claim incumbency for that person. It works with a lot of voters. Well, exactly. But I don't know. Douglas County is bigger in population than Eastern Weld. But then you've got portions of Adams County in there. You've got portions of Boulder County. I think when they did the redistricting, right, they tried to keep it kind of even, right? So I'm not sure. I think that might be a push, Kieran, when it comes. And then Charlene says exactly, Claire, and Flora is who the Rhinos will push. She's grassroots, like KBB is grassroots. All of that's true. But I don't know. I just don't see Jerry Sonnenberg sitting back quietly, letting Ken Buck essentially anoint Deborah Flora. I think that they will push her. There are Rhinos who are pushing Deborah Flora for the general primary, but to be appointed to run in the special election, I don't know that she has that kind of support. What do you think, Chuck?
No, she doesn't know those people. I mean, you know, and Sonnenberg will have working with a lot of them over time. You know, Mike Lynch may know some of them, but he's such damaged goods these days after his DUI arrest that he's not in it. So, you know, my guess is it's Sonnenberg and will the trickiness work? I don't know.
That's the definite question is this is which in a way it kind of supports Lauren because it kind of indicates they're somewhat terrified of her there, right? And so that's Charlene. I go back to your point with the Koch brothers. I mean, they're very worried that I think that Lauren Boebert was going to win. And so this is an attempt, however it plays out, to undermine that. Because initially I was like, why is he doing this? And then after talking to people all day yesterday, they're like, no, this is what's going on behind the scenes there. And are they too tricky for their own good? It'd be hard to tell, really. But here's from Kieran. Flora is more connected than people think. There's no point for Buck to have leave so soon unless he and the GOPs want to entrench a permanent rhino. Bobert is getting the word out about the sliminess of the backroom deal. Yes, I mean, she was on the ball there. Can you imagine, though? She must have been mad when she heard that. I mean, Mike Johnson was mad, right?
She has learned to be stoic. You might say,
oh, Julie, can I just say this about Lauren?
Sure.
She was on that, like they say in the South, like a guinea on a cutworm. I mean, she was so fast on what was happening, and she came out with a statement, and she had a fundraiser last night. So I'm so impressed with how quick she is to, you know, get on the offense after they tried to corner her. But here's the reason I think that it's a rhino deal is because I think the globalists have given up on Trump not getting the presidency. So now they're working on the House and, you know, to sabotage Trump and booby trap him on everything. And so they got to make sure they get all the rhinos in there that they can. And so I think they're working it from every angle. And this was just a way to get, a last ditch effort to get a rhino in. But here's the thing. Trump was going to propose tariffs to make manufacturing come back to the United States to make it cheaper to offset how cheap the labor was in China. You know, we'd put a tariff on them and then we'd get more manufacturing. Well, that doesn't sit well with the globalist Koch brothers. They have 120,000 employees worldwide over in 60 countries. So they're not MAGA, they're Globa. And so they're going to do everything they can to keep tariffs and keep Trump from bringing making America great again, because they care about the globalists, not
You're
America.
You're right. So the Koch brother said, you know, he's given up on the presidential one and is going to work on. And so he's, you know, they're supporting Jeff Crank.
Exactly. So we just need to make a list of all. Someone asked on Facebook today, well, who is it that is not globalist supported and is not supported by the Kochs? And so I think we got a list of like four or five. We just need to get that word out. Like, these are MAGA, the others aren't. This is who Trump endorses. And the other. Okay, thanks, Julie.
All right, Charlene, and I think you're absolutely right there. And actually, you know, you took it a step further, because I was kind of thinking, now, who would have approached Buck? Would it have been Sonnenberg's people? Would it have been this? And I think you're absolutely right. No, the Koch people approached Buck and said, hey, we need to make sure Lauren Boebert's leading in the polls.
Right.
Everything has been not working and trying to get her out. So we need to do something. And Buck is like, sure, I'll do that.
Yeah, well, they failed with Haley and they failed with DeSantis. So, I mean,
right.
You know?
And you're right. And they want to sabotage Congress. You're exactly right. That's what they're trying to do there. And speaking of that, though, on a happy note, Charlene, thank you. One other thing, too, though. Did you see President Trump endorse Dave Williams, which is
excellent. Yes. Do you have that in front of you to be able to read it?
No. Oh, I don't. But he basically said, hey, look, Dave Williams delivered for us in the primary, in the presidential primary. Dave Williams has been a solid supporter of mine forever. Dave Williams has accomplished great things for the Colorado Republican Party. Now, you know, here's the thing. It was not in any, well, I guess maybe they did it and they trashed him, some of the Anschutz media, for being like an election denier.
But
right?
They didn't put in the shot that Trump took against Crank.
No, they did not. They pointed out, Charlene, and for all of you, that Jeff Crank was Americans for Chinese prosperity or something like that, Trump called them. So, yeah, so here are the candidates. So the Koch brothers and the Americans for Prosperity people are supporting Gabe Evans in CD8.
Boo.
They're supporting Jeff Crank in CD5.
Boo.
And they were, who are they? I don't know who were, well, we'll see who they're supporting in CD4. Maybe. It's so those are the guys, you know, the MAGA candidates are Ron Hanks in CD3, Lauren in CD4, Janet Joshi in CD8.
Yeah.
Although I think he's got an uphill battle, and then Lauren in CD4 and Dave in CD5. So those are the people we want. So, yeah. And so far, I think it's kind of cool. Two Colorado candidates, Lauren and Dave Williams, have Trump's endorsement, which is huge, I think. So that kind of helps
people.
It'd
be great if Ron could get the endorsement.
I know. We need to. I'm sure Ron is like, excuse me. They'll be working on that. So anyway, it's just a dirty deal. And, you know, it just Ken Buck has zippo integrity, you know? I mean, and I think Charlene, you're absolutely on it. He sold out. I mean, I'm sure the Koch people approached him and said, you know, what can we do to make sure that Lauren Boebert, how do we tank Lauren Boebert before, you know, before she even really gets out the gate very much, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's going to be a fascinating. I hope Trump comes to Colorado with these endorsements, increases the likelihood that he might.
Oh, here we go. Sandra's on it. Thank you, Sandra. So Trump said he, Dave Williams, will help us win Colorado this November in Congress. Dave will work hard to secure the border, fight for election integrity, support our military vets, and protect and defend our undersea Second Amendment, and secure the border. Yeah, secure the border. Thank you, Sandra. That's what he said. So yay for Dave Williams.
Well, what happened to the Chinese thing?
Oh, well, that was in a further step. She didn't type the whole thing. She just gave me that.
Oh,
So,
okay.
we will keep you guys up on that because I just think it's important to reveal if this is that's a it's a dirty deed, and you need to watch carefully who ends up being appointed for the special election. That's something to pay attention to. So that's going to wrap it up for us on Wednesday. We have a Friday. This is Wednesday. So we have Ash Epp. She has a great analysis of all this stuff coming out about January 6th. She says, number one, November 3rd was the coup. January 6th was the cover up of the coup. And the January 6th Liz Cheney committee was a cover up of the cover up. And she's going to kind of walk us through all of that. And then Representative Scott Bottoms, who's a real grassroots hero down at the legislature. They're attacking charter schools. There's like literally like 10 anti-Second Amendment bills up. So we're going to be talking to him about all of that on Party Friday.
On
So
Party Friday, there we go. There we go. All
that's
right, everybody. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Lord Conrad Black, and we appreciate all the people calling in or raising their hand and everything through, and of course, our BBS great people, Thomas, etc. So we'll see you on Party Friday, and until then, drive safe in the snow if you're in Colorado.
See everybody later. Thanks.